All right, order in the court. Order in the court. Okay, let's begin. Rabbi Sai, we're up to, we're in the middle of the fourth nation, the nation of Edom. Yesterday we pretty much finished up the nation of Edom on page 272. We learned about the three sins of Edom, Avodah Zarah, Gilurai Shvichas, Stam, which Hashem was willing to forgive, but the fourth Aver Hashem is not willing to forgive. And then the Pasuk elaborates. We learned, we spent the whole shiur yesterday on the various midos of Esav, al-redofoi, v'acherev, ochi, v'shicheis, rachamah, v'yitreif, lo'ad, apoi, v'evrosoi, shemoro, netzach. Okay, that was yesterday, the evil nature of Esav, the sins that he has done, going back to the time of Yaakov Avinu, when he chased after Yaakov. Yaakov had to flee. His mother Rivka told him, you have to run away, your brother wants to kill you. You have taken the brachas from Yitzchak, your brother wants to kill you, run away. The next major incident we've learned in the Mefarshim was in the time of the Midbar, when Klal Yisrael was traveling in the Midbar, Moshe Rabbeinu, he made a request, sent a request to Melech Edom, please let us pass through your land. Let us pass through your land. Oops. Can I make it a little lower? Let us pass through your land, and it's good now. I have also volume control here, so. But if it's not good, you'll adjust it. You'll tell me. Let us pass through your land, and what happened? And Edom says, "Don't you dare! If you attempt to come through my land, pen bacherev etzei likrasecha." The third event we mentioned yesterday, mentioned in one of the Mefarshim, is during the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. They were mercenaries hired by the Nebuchadnezzar to participate in the Churban of the Bayis Rishon. And then obviously the next major event was the Churban Bayis Sheni, which was done through Edom. And then we mentioned in the Malbum, the very very fascinating interpretation, and we learned the words "V'evrosai Shemor Netzach" is a reference to all of the crimes, horrors, terror, korban that Esav brought upon Klal Yisrael in the remainder of history, referring to, as we said, the last 2,000 years, all the pogroms, the Inquisition, the Chmelnytsky massacres. The Holocaust, Inquisition, expulsions, the unfair taxation, the czars of Russia, the list goes on and on and on. All of these things were perpetuated primarily by Esav. And that's how he learns the word V'evrosoi Shemora Netzach. That is one more idea we have to mention. It's a fascinating idea from the Chaim HaSanach, from the Chidah. We didn't do yesterday, page 273, the last thing, for the last idea on this pasuk. And that's what he says here. Well, the truth is, we have one more Maimon Chazal. Let's do the Chidah first, then we'll get back to the... I left out a Maimon Chazal yesterday, but let's see, look at the Chidah on page 273, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Al Shloisha Pishei Edom, Edom Gematria Tomei Im HaKoilel, together with the morning Koilel. No, just joking. Obviously, you know that the word Koilel means you add one more. Or sometimes koila means he add one for every letter, whatever it is. Can we add the gematrius here? The next thing is...
I'm sorry, usually koila means you koila the word itself.
Right, in addition to each letter, in addition to each letter, you add one more. The word in its entirety is one more. But sometimes koila also means you add for each letter. If the word is tome, so you add three. They're different types of koilim. There's a koilil for Yungalite, a koilil for retirees. All different types of koilim. All right, that's not my topic. That's not what I want to focus on. The next words. The next. Yeah?
If I have problems,
he doesn't say koilil so much.
No.
He's not into koilils. He's into working. Okay.
Don't we say many times it's just ad klal? Sometimes the Gemara
wants to include... The Gemara is not into gematrias. The Gemara very rarely presents a gematria. There are a few hand-picked gematria. No, that's a whole different concept. Forget about that. Let's go further. Here's what I want to focus on. Al redafai bachedev achiv. Perish Matana shenasin loy aviv v'amar loy Hashem. Good morning. Hashem gave Esav a gift. Yitzchak gave Esav a gift. What is the gift? Al charbecha tichya, the gift of the sword. And what did Esav use the gift that his father gave him for? To bring harm to his father. How does one harm his father? By killing or trying to kill his father's other children. So it would have been bad enough if Esav would have brought harm upon Yaakov. But it's doubly evil is that the gift that Yitzchak gave Esav used specifically that gift to give his father Agmas Nefesh by persecuting his father's other children, namely Yaakov. Okay, that's a very important idea. You have a gift. Yeah, someone gives you a gift, and to take the gift they give you and to use it against your benefactor. So it's not just that you're a kofri toif. If a person that gives you, does you a favor, you know, you should not be a kofri toif. You have an obligation to appreciate. You've been good to me. I have a duty to reciprocate, or at least to show my expression of thanks, appreciation. And yet to take the gift that your benefactor has given you and to use that as a tool to cause harm to your benefactor? Wow, that's not just being kofri toiv, that's being kofri toiv on steroids. That's really a harmful thing. Okay, so here he writes, that's the first thing. Alachor chatichya b'matonazo rotz lahag b'cherev ochiv v'sheyitztaher oviv v'kavonosay. How did he want to give harm to his father? Hayo laharoig ochiv, to kill his brother, v'chol zaroi v'yirashu hakol, and Esav will inherit the entire world. Now this next line is very fascinating. Haloi zeh miledo mibetin kidei. This already started when he was in his mother's womb, the womb of Rivka. Kidei shlotei leid oid Rivka imoi b'oidu b'mei imoi, that his mother should not give birth to another child. Chotach matrin shela. Now matrin means, I guess, her womb or the ability to have more children. Whatever this is, some type of the reproductive organs. When he was in his mother's womb, he did something that would prevent his mother from ever having children again. Didn't you ever wonder, why did Yitzchak only have two children? Why didn't he have 12 children, like Yaakov, his son? Well, what happened? The answer is, Esav prevented Rivka from having more children by doing something horrible to her while he was in her womb.
But they were having trouble before.
In Chanami, so just because they had trouble before doesn't mean they have trouble afterwards. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened up the channel of allowing them to have children. So, and I think there is a medrash that says that Yitzchak really was meant to have many more children. I don't remember the details, but I think Yaakov was like a hashlama. But Yitzchak was meant to have more. Meant to have more than two children, and it's only because of the cruelty of Esav that Yitzchak did not have more children. Who else do we find the same thing by? This week's parasha. Noach, after he came out of the teva, he came shame, chum, and yefes. Noach wanted to have more children. And that is why chum, he went, and when he saw that his father was sleeping, he saw that his father was sleeping, he was drunk, and he was uncovered, he went and he did something to him to prevent him from having more children. And that is why when Noach woke up from his wine, he cursed him. Eved, he cursed his fourth child, who's Canaan. Canaan will be Eved La'avadim. Why specifically Canaan, the fourth child of Canaan, of Chom? Because you, Chom, prevented me from having a fourth child. Mida, Keneged Mida, your fourth child should be cursed.
Was the one who did it.
Does it say that? Canaan? I don't know if the Pashup Shat. I'm not familiar. I think Rashi. What? You both shot him? Okay, well, not on time now, but maybe when we can go look it up. So we can use Rashi. You call Rashi.
Anyway,
so,
the word means womb.
The womb, okay.
Eternal.
Okay, but the womb was still there. It means the koyach, the
severity,
this something there in the womb which would prevent Rivka from having more children. And again, so this already we find such an act of cruelty by Chom in this week's parasha. because Chum saw the world would be divided amongst three people, Shem, Chum, and Yefes. They were to divide the world, and Chum did not want to give away a portion of his world to someone else. To prevent this from happening, he prevented his father from having more children. Esav learned from the evil ways of Chum, and Esav also prevented his mother from having more children by committing this horrible act. Notice Esav did something to his mother, whereas Chum did something to his father. Interesting what if that has any significance. But we definitely find, I don't know if we find anyone, I think these are the only two Ishei HaTanach we find such a concept. Maybe there are more, but generally...
No, well, but this was an inside job.
Okay,
sorry,
very
sorry,
funny.
Right, it was Chum. Chum was the one who told his father, and he made a connection with him, sorry.
No, no, you're right. Okay, let's go further. Vagam Shenoikem. Okay, that's Vashiches. Now, here's an incredible translation. We translate the word Rachamav means, we spent time on this yesterday, that he destroyed his mid of Rachmanus. Vashiches, that we made a comparison. L'chavdol, Elif, Alfi, Avdolus, Rabbi Shul Salanter. You can have a Musar yeshiva to work on your midos, to improve your midos. Esav had a yeshiva to work on removing from himself and his students the good midos, in order to act with cruelty, in order to make sure that we come into a situation they would have no rachmanis. There's a precedent for this, an example of this, and that is Nebuchadnezzar and who was it? It was Nebuchadnezzar.
What?
Who's the person who made a shvuah at Tzidkiyahu? Tzidkiyahu Nebuchadnezzar. What happened? Tzidkiyahu was part of they had a meeting every so often. Nebuchadnezzar would call together all of the world leaders. What's it called? The G8? What's it called today? The G8? He had the G8. And where was the G8? Where was the G8 held? Not in Geneva. It was held in Bavel, in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar invited all of the world powers, the world leaders, heads of state, to come and attend this meeting just to get together and see what's doing in the world. And who was invited? Tzidkiyahu, because Tzidkiyahu was the king of Yehuda, of the whole Eretz Yisrael, which was a major force in the world at that time. And what happened? It was lunch. They had a break for lunch, and everyone went out to their hotel room, and the Tzidkiyahu had special kosher food, a special kosher kitchen, and a special caterer, special kalim. But he wanted to tell something to Nebuchadnezzar, and he was on very good terms with him. So he comes back to the palace a little bit early before the lunch break was over. He knocks on the door. He opens the door. And he enters into the private chamber of Nebuchadnezzar while he was still eating lunch. And what was his lunch? He was eating Eiver Min Hachai. He was eating live animals. And Nebuchadnezzar was taken aback. The door should have been locked. What are you walking in here when I'm in the middle of eating? And you've just seen me eat Eiver Min Hachai. If you go out and tell this to the media, oh boy, and they post this online, that Nebuchadnezzar eats Eiver, living animals, you could imagine the fallout. Peter is not going to be very happy with this, torturing animals, and the world is not going to be very, you know, it's a very, the world were Democrats, they were liberals, you know, they're not going to appreciate that
the
Nebuchadnezzar eats living animals. It's not by coveted, it's not the right thing to do. So, Nebuchadnezzar made Tzidkiyahu, he told him, you're not walking out of this room alive unless you swear to me you will not reveal this secret, what you have just seen, to anyone. And Tzidkiyahu had no choice but to take the shvuah not to reveal this secret to anyone. Years later, when there was a fallout between Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar, and Tzidkiyahu wanted to convince the Sanhedrin that we should rebel against Nebuchadnezzar and not pay tribute, not pay homage to Nebuchadnezzar, he said, this Nebuchadnezzar is a lowlife. He eats Eiver Min Hacha. He eats living creatures. He eats rabbits, all these things, whatever it was they were eating. So he violated the Shavua. the violation of revealing, and then it went out and became public knowledge, and Nebuchadnezzar eats living animals, it became public knowledge, it got back to Nebuchadnezzar, and he was enraged. He was enraged that Tzidkiyahu violated the Shavuah, the oath. And this is a very significant thing in the Churim Beis Hamikdash. This was a very significant contributing factor to the Nebuchadnezzar's desire to destroy the Beis Hamikdash, because Tzidkiyahu violated a Shavuah. In ancient times, you didn't violate, even today you shouldn't violate it, it's Aseres HaDibros, but it was considered to be a very, very severe thing for a person, and certainly a head of state, and to violate a Shavuah. Okay, that's the story. Question. What in the world is Nebuchadnezzar eating living creatures? What was he doing? So the commentators all say the same thing is, Nebuchadnezzar recognized that he is a human being created in the Tselem Elohim, as we mentioned yesterday, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Rachum V'Chanon. The Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kel Rachum V'Chanon. Erech HaPai V'Rav Chesed V'Yemes. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a being who has Rachmonis, and a human being is created in the image of Hashem, a human being also has Rachmanis. Nebuchadnezzar did not want to have any Rachmanis. Nebuchadnezzar was a cruel, evil person, and he felt that when he entered into engage in war, there was a little tinge of Rachmanis that held him back from obliterating his enemies and from conquering them without any restraint. So he worked on himself to uproot the Mida of Rachmanis. How did he do so? One of the techniques in this Musar Yeshiva of uprooting Rachmanis is to eat for lunch every day living animals. When you take a living animal and you take a bite out of it, that's an act of cruelty. And that, the more you do it, the more you destroy the Mida, the natural Mida of Rachmanis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put within you. So this is what he was doing when he was eating living animals. He was doing exactly what it says here, Vishiches Rachamav. He was destroying the natural Midah of Rachmanus that Hashem puts into a human being. And that's how we translated the words yesterday. We elaborated upon this yesterday. But here the Chidah provides us a new, fascinating translation of Rachamav. Rachamav also comes from the word Rechem, a womb. The womb of your mother, a womb. And Shiches Esav destroyed the Rechem, that word that he used, the Matrin, the womb of his mother Rivka, when he was in the womb, by doing something, whatever he did, he did Maisa Hashchasa, which would prevent his mother Rivka from ever having a child again. Okay, so this is the Makar. It's a famous Medrash. This is a Medrash when you learn Parashas Toldos. You hear this Medrash every so often, that he prevented his mother from having another child, and the significance of that, Esav. And here is the Makar. Here is the Makar, Vishiches Rachamav. He destroyed the womb of his mother. This is the source. So back to the words of the Chidah. Shenemar Vishiches Rachamav, K'moish Amur Azal, B'psik the Rabbos, Yidaf Yudches, Uviyalkut Soif Parashas Tetzev, V'chim B'sefer Chassidim. See that? We're learning Sefer Chassidim now. Simon Tuf Tuf Shin Lam, is that we have a long way until we get to there, if we'll ever get there. Kos Av Esav HaRosh Okar Matrin Shalimai, V'yam Afaresh. And those who explain Sham Hevi, those the commentators there in Sefer Chassidim and in the Yalkut explain Hevi Miyalkut Sham Hevi Miyalkut Tehillim Mizmor Koftes Shekosav Hafach Matron Shalah. It's also mentioned in Tehillim in the Yalkut in Tehillim Medrash. It's mentioned here as well. Ayin Sham VeLozachar De Miyalkut Atzmei Parshas Teitzei Kosav Chotach. It says the chotach, all the Rishonim bring this already down. The chosav sham sefer chasidim. Now, I really don't know what this means here. He says, but the basic Yisrael is the afogav the ein yetzahara ad she yetzah min habeten. When does a person get a yetzahara? After he leaves the womb. Not until then. When he's inside the womb of his mother, the Malach is there teaching him Torah. There is no Yetzer Hara. the Yetzirah first begins, ki Yetzirah Adam Ra min Urav, the moment he's born, the moment he comes out of his mother's womb. And when does he get the Yetzer Toiv? When he is Bar Mitzvah. So there's always a 13-year head start the Yetzer has over the Yetzer Toiv. Okay, that's a classic Bar Mitzvah drasha. Is when a person becomes Bar Mitzvah, he now gets the Yetzer Toiv. And that means the Yetzer Toiv is always 13 years younger than the Yetzer Hara. But what about inside the mother's womb? What's there? Either it's neutral, or adrabah, there's only a Yetzer Toiv, because Chazal tell us, in the mother's womb, the malach is teaching the infant, the embryo, teaching the baby, the neshama, kol hatarukula. So they ask the chida, how could Esav do an act of cruelty in his mother's womb when he did not yet get the Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer first comes when he leaves womb. You can ask this kasha, we learn in Rashi, Parshas told us, is that when they passed the base Avodah Zarah, he kicked. What are you kicking for? Why do you want to come out? You don't yet have a Yetzer Hara until you come into this world. So what is going on? Who asked this kasha? The Chido asked this kasha. What is his answer? I have no idea. But his words are, Shiny Esav, Shahoya Me Oysan, Tov Tov Kuf Ayin Dala Doris. He was from the Tov Tov Kuf Ayin Doris before the Torah was given. So what does that mean exactly? The Torah was created 974 generations before the world was created. The Torah was given in the 26th generation. So add 26 to 974, it equals 1,000. What does that mean exactly? I have no idea. Mamish, no idea what this means. But basically, he was an exception. Esav was an exception to the rule. He had a Yetzer Hara even inside his mother's womb. Why is he an exception? No clue. Okay, let's go further. The rest, okay, that rest is not telling us anything. Okay, so that concludes this Chazal. Now, we did leave out yesterday a Maimer Chazal. I forgot to, on page 273, on the very, very bottom, Likutei Shas, Midrash HaTanoim, Al Redofoi, Bacherev Ochiv, Vishchiches Rachma, Yitrev, Lo'ad Apoi, Ve'evroset Shom L'Netzach. This is the Pasuk. This Pasuk, we cannot emphasize Pasuk enough to underline this and put this in red and bold. Capitalize it, quotation marks. This Pasuk defines the essence of Esav. The entire nature of Esav is found here in this Pasuk. This Pasuk captures what we always have to remember every single day. Halacha biyodeinu Esav soine Yaakov. Watch out. Even though we mentioned yesterday, even though Baruch Hashem, Chastei Hashem, things today are very good relative to what was in the past, but we have to remember, Be'oisasha nichmiru rachamav. Esav came with 400 men to wipe out Klal Yisrael. 400 is the largest letter number in the Torah. Tough. He came with everything that he got, every technique, every weapon. 400 men. Tough. The last letter of the Aleph Beis. The most you can possibly do. To do what? To destroy Klal Yisrael. Yaakov's messengers in Parshas Vayishlach were told, Esav is coming to you with 400 men to destroy you. Vayira Yaakov me'oid vayetzer lo. Yaakov was terrified as can possibly be. And he was mispalel, he prepared for war, he had strategy, and he sent a gift. Yaakov also did everything in his power. And then the greatest miracle in world history happened, that when there was a meeting between Esav and Yaakov, Esav kissed Yaakov. He did not harm him, he kissed him. You know, Mais of a similar bonum. Everything that happens in the Torah is a similar what's going to happen in the future.
But there's a Chazal that he wants to bite him.
And then, but that was by Lavan.
By Yishakeyu,
the dots. By Yishakeyu, okay, I'm sorry, you're correct. By Yishakeyu, we wanted to bite him. But then he changed. Enochinami, that's all part of the transformation. The bottom line is, the greatest miracle in world history is the war between Klal Yisrael and the world. Esav represents Edom, Golos Edom, which is Koilel. And we'll tell you that Edom is Koilel, all of the Dalam Malchias, the whole world. And finally came the day of confrontation. We came to the battlefield. We met. And what happened? Instead of him using everything that he has at his disposal to destroy us, he kissed us. Haloi Davar. And whatever happens in Chumash is Maise Avos Simin Lebanim. I mean, what? Halacha Biyadeinu is a tradition. Esa means the Edom, the nation of Esav.
It doesn't mean Goy, every Goy.
It does. Edom. Well, we are now living in Golos Edom. Edom is a descendant, is Esav. Edom is Esav. They are the personified, they are the Midas, the personification of Esav. Halacha biyadin, we have a tradition in our hands. That man, that nation, they hate us. Oh, how come today?
As an individual, can we say every
as
Goy?
Everything, every Goy. Every guy has hatred inborn, in them inborn. Towards us. Inborn hatred. It's
what
part of their DNA.
What about the
Poles
that risked their lives during the war and
they
saved Jews?
So how do you understand that? It's Sarachi and Gadol Adnoi. And there are. Don't get me wrong. There are definitely Chassidei Umos Olam. There are definitely Tzadikim. How do we understand this? I don't know. But it's all included in this miracle. And what's the miracle? Be'ois Shoah. At that moment of confrontation, his rachmanus, he's a brother. It's natural. A human being has rachmanus upon your brother. It was nichmru. It was churned. I don't have a good translation. It bubbled up. It prevailed. That's called, that's nichlal in ba'oysa shah. There are times in this world, in history, when Esav has been very, very good to Klal Yisrael. In the Chassidei Umos Olam, in World War II, in the Holocaust, there were many, my own grandfather's brother, he jumped off the train, he was in Auschwitz, there was a transfer, and he was transferred somewhere, and he jumped off the train, and he found this place to hide in a pit, and he jumped into this pit, and he stayed there, I think, for months, and a guy in Esav saw him in the pit, and he threw him potatoes to stay alive. He threw down, every time he walked there to the pit, he knew he was hiding there, he threw down potatoes. So that guy is not going to go to Olam Haba. He certainly will. And that guy is probably didn't get any covet. No one knows about him. He's not in Yad Vashem. In the Chassidei Umos Olam, no one ever knew what happened to him. This guy came and saw a Jew starving. Wow. Instead of killing him, he threw him some potatoes. So you're right. And that's just one of thousands of stories of the Chassidei Umos Olam. Okay, look what Trump did. You want to say that his Hanhaga so far has been Lamalim Derech HaTeva? Okay, Trump is a guy. Let's not forget that. Just because he has an Eden, Shem Shabbos, and will very likely have Ein Eklach, that will be in Koilo Chazonish, even though... But Trump is a guy. A guy is a guy. And a guy, halacha biyadeinu Esav soina Yaakov. Beware of Trump. That's what Rashi tells us. Oh, he's doing good things. Chaste Hashem. It's nichlal in what it says. Be'oysa shoah. Be'oysa shoah is just a blink of an eye. It's a moment in time. We hope that moment lasts for a very long time. And Baruch Hashem, America has been very good to us. Medina shel chesed she'en kamohu. But we have to remember the words of Chazal, be'ois ha'shah nichneru rachamav. Okay, let's go further. Bilam. Oh, so Bilam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu...
So maybe here also somehow Yaakov was...
No, but that was different, because that, it was a nevuah, it was something that was beyond him even. He was a prophet, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu controlled his mind. So that's like a different league, an entirely different league.
The words of the Chazal, aren't they very strange? Halachi hi... You know, it's very strange.
What do those words mean?
Yeah. It should have just said, Esav son of Yaakov. But it says, Halacha hi biyadeinu.
It's coming to remind you. I think what it means is...
It's a
very strange kind of lusher.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
They want to impress on us.
Yes. Yeah. Even in the good times, when you could never, ever imagine, they would do
it's
it.
It's halacha.
It's still halacha. Like you find in Germany. In Germany, the Jews never would believe such a fine, cultured nation as Germany would do genocide, 6 million. No, they couldn't imagine such a thing. It wasn't possible. It wasn't possible. The only one who did, you know, the only one that did predict it, I mean, in a very great way, was Theodor Herzl. It's shocking. Okay, people who the Haredi world is not very fond of, okay, not very fond of such a person, and he said that one of some of the worst things you can possibly say about Yadus. He's the one that even in way, way back, way before World War I, said there is no way in the world a Jew and a Goy can live together.
Because after Dreyfus, that
there's a lot of this written about Dreyfus and Theodor Herzl. It used to be old school that Theodor Herzl was highly influenced by Dreyfus. New school is, it's not true. Read up on it.
It was no influence.
No, of course. But it was not an ikor. It was an example, right?
You see this.
Yeah, yes, then, right. Okay, right. Enochanami. So even in the best of times, who would ever imagine? Chazal say, we're telling you, you don't understand. Halacha biyodeinu. When you do halacha, you understand why you do the halacha. You don't understand. This is what you have to do, whether you like it or not. If you're an Orthodox Jew, you have a muna. That's the way it is. Chazal tell you, watch out. You have to be very careful. Kavdeyu va'achashdeyu. An expression, kavdeyu means you give him kavod, but at the same time, be suspicious. Be suspicious. You have to be very cautious. Be very cautious in this world. Okay, let's now go. Now here comes the punishment phase. Pasuk Yudbeis winds down. V'shilach the esh b'seimon. Taman, what is Taman? We'll have to see what that means in a moment. It's either the name of a place where it means the entire south, the entire region of Edom, the Ochla Armenois Botsra. Botsra. Okay, it's like Botsra. There's a meseg under the resh. So it's really, you think it's Botsra, but it's like Bots. What?
Not necessarily.
It's a very strange word. What? Okay, not Basra. No, that's Iraq. Basra.
Maybe not.
Okay, that's one of the capitals of Edom. Let's take a look at the Mefarshim. Pasuk Yud Beis in the Mitzudos David. On page, the Mitzudos David is on page 275. Okay, Yud Taman. What is Taman? He eretz Edom, hasmuchel eretz Yisrael bidroima, v'silke gamhi. So we're saying that Taman is a general region, the entire south. And the south means. What?
Taman is not Edom, right?
Taman? He's saying that. He's saying that Taman is Edom, and we're calling it Taman is a region. See, that's the question. What exactly is Taman? Is Taman a city? Is it a country? Is it a region? Is it relative to Eretz Yisrael? So it's a what?
It's also a direction.
A direction, okay. A direction relative to Eretz Yisrael, the south. This is the Mesudos David. Okay, each Mefarish to his own. He learns, at least now that it's a region. We don't really know exactly where Edom is. That's one of the big mysteries. In the art scroll, in the back of the Tanakh, they'll show you a general area of where we think Edom is, to the south, southwest. No, not east. Southeast, southwest. Can't be south. I'm all mixed up. Right. Southeast. Right. I don't know my left from my right. I don't feel bad, you know, because they say they have Yosha Ber Salvechuk. Nechemya Kristol, just spoke to him recently. Nechemya Kristol, Baruch Hashem, he's in Bergenfield. He's doing very well there. He's very happy there. He goes to Kollel there. He goes to a very chashuv Kollel there in Bergenfield. He sends regards to everyone. So he actually told me from Rabbi Yosha Ber Salvechuk that whenever they said to him, he said right and left, he had to think, which is my left hand and which is my right hand? It wasn't like, you know, most people, you say left, it's like, it's a jerk reaction. Left, right. But Rav Yosha Ber Salavechik, when he said left, when he said left, he paused. Wait a minute. Which is my left? Which is my right? Oh, this is my left hand. This is my right hand. Can you imagine one of the most brilliant people of this generation, when you said left and right, he was brilliant beyond belief. And yet, when he said left and right, he had to make a cheshbon, which is my left and the right. So, I'm not anymore. I used to know you should drive a GPS and make a left, make a right. and I would make a left, and I go right. What am I doing over here? I don't know my left. Then you lean
the
small.
Arrow.
What?
Watch the arrow.
Watch the arrow. So that makes it easy, right? So I used to feel I must be such an idiot. But then when I heard of Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, the most brilliant, one of the most brilliant people of our generation, he also had a cheshbon, which is left and right. I don't feel so bad anymore. It goes to show that people's minds play tricks on them. They work in unique ways. Okay, so reality here, you're right, it is the southeast. Edom is approximately, Yishol Zev, approximately somewhere in the southeast of Eretz Yishol. Where, what, how, the boundaries, I don't know the shaykh to know anymore. It's not really possible to know where it was in ancient times. Where is Edom today? Well, that's so some will tell you that it's Russia. Hey, you say it's Russia. Some will tell you that it was European nations. Some will tell you it's Poland. Some will tell you that it's America today. Or it's a big conglomerate.
No,
it's a big conglomerate.
It's not the Jews to follow. It starts with Rome, then goes to, then becomes Christianity and the Christian world. And when that fades, when the Roman Empire, and for that matter, Christianity fades out, it becomes Western civilization.
Western civilization. That's today what they translate. That's the term. Western civilization, which is spread throughout the entire world, pretty much, is what we call today Edom. So it's not located. We live in a virtual world. Everything is doesn't depend, really make a difference where your geographic location. It's more who you identify with is the nation. Okay, let's see that this is so Taimon, in his interpretation, it means like you said, a direction, someplace relative to Eretz Yisrael. Botsra, Ir HaBitsura V'Krach Gadol, it was the name of a city. Okay, now Betzer, you remember this the whole Chazal, Betzer Bamidbar? One of the cities in Eretz Yisrael is Betzer. It's Betzer. It's one of the Orei Miklot. Betzer Bamidbar, that's the Eber HaYarden, is that where it is? I don't remember. In Ruvain? Betzer. So one of the six, there are six major Ori Miklot, and then there are 42 minor Ori Miklots. So one of the major Ori Miklot is Betzer. Betzer. And the Gemara says that when Mashiach will come, the Satan, the Yetzar, the Malach HaMaves, knows that its days are numbered. It knows, but the Yetzirah also went to Shir. Also learned in Yeshiva, also went to Cheder, and the Yetzar is aware that there's something called Orei Miklot. So the Yetzar says, Mashiach is here, that means my days are numbered, I'm now a wanted man. I remember my youth, I learned in Yeshiva, and in Yeshiva they taught me that Bet said that there's a place you can go if you're a fugitive. You can go to an Ori Miklot where the Goyal Hadam can't kill you. So I remember vaguely when we learned in Yeshiva, there was a city called Betzer. So I'm going to run. So where does the Malach HaMaves run to be spared from his demise when Mashiach comes? He runs to the Roman city called Botsra.
That's the series, Bayim Edom.
He runs to Botsra. And then the Gemara Chazal, they mock him. They say, such a shvach of Talmud, such a weak student, this Malach HaMaves, such a shvach of Talmud. First of all, he didn't pay attention. Number one, the Ori Miklot is not Botsra in Rome, it's Betzer in Eretz Yisrael. Number two, the city only spares those people who killed B'shoigeg, not people who kill B'mezit. And the Yetzirah, the Malach HaMaves, is a Ratzeach B'mezit. Then there's a third thing, I don't remember what it was, the third criticism. So they're basically saying is that the Satan was not an A student. If he was an A student, he knew how to kill, that he knew how to do. But if he knew he was a good student, he would realize that running to Batsra is not going to save his skin. What? Did he do Teshuva? It doesn't say he did Teshuva. Well, it says originally that the Satan is the Mischav of the Shem Shemaim. He doesn't need to do Tshuva. He doesn't need to do Tshuva. He was the Mischavim when it came to Eoiv. Eoiv, the Satan instigated Hashem against Eoiv. And one of the Amoraim or the Tanoim that said that Eoiv, when he did this, was the Mischavim the Shem Shemaim. And because he saw, the Satan saw that Hashem's love for Avram Avinu was not so strong anymore. Being that there's another creature in this world called Eoiv, who is a Yoresh Shemayim and does everything that Hashem wants. So Hashem's love to Avram chilled down. In order to restore the love to Avram, the Satan brought upon Eoiv a Kitroik, which showed that he was not the great tzaddik that we all thought to the extreme degree. And the Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for Avram Avinu was restored. So he acted L'shem Shemayim. The Satan was so flattered that this Amorah said that he acted L'shem Shemayim. He came to kiss him. So therefore you see that Enoch Hanami, maybe who says, Satan, who knows what his Cheshbonos are. Any event, from our perspective, it doesn't make a difference. He's a wanted man. He's a wanted man and he will get what he deserves. And he's a Shvacha student. He's a C student. And that's why he doesn't realize that it's not Batsra, it's Betzer. Here, it's a very important pasuk, because here we're actually mentioning that the capital was singling out one major city of Edom that represents their capital, their pride and joy. And that is Batsra. And that's the city to which the Malach HaMavis will run for refuge at the time of Moshiach. And it's not a coincidence that Batsra is very similar to the Ari Miklat in Eretz Yisrael called Betzer, which is a topic in and of itself. Okay, now let's take a look at the Rashi. Yudbeis writes, Armanois Batzra, Bein Moyav, Ubein Edoim, Hi, Umi Eretz Moyav, Nimsheches Achar Edoim. This city is a very funny city. It spans two nations. Mitzad Echad, it's in Moyav. And it's on the border, I guess, between Moav and Edom, and it overlaps two nations. Ubein Edom behi ubein Eretz Moav v'nim shechas achar Edom v'hem mido loy melech b'moys hamelech harishain. It was this nation that established the king when the first melech died. Shnemar Yoivav ben Zerach mi Botzra. So when the first king died, and now they needed a replacement. So from which town did the second king come? It came from Batsra. So Batsra has a lot of unique characteristics, which obviously Rashi is telling us this. There's a lot of dvarim, a lot of secrets. Dvarim ha'im din berumai shalolam. It's a city which really spans two nations, Edom and Moav. We have to know that Moav, every time we talk about Moav, we're really referring to Mashiach. Because David HaMelech comes from Moav, Rus HaMoavi, and Edom is the fourth Golos of Klal Yisrael. And we need David, who came from Edom, to get us out, David, who came from Moav, to get us out of the Golos of Edom. So like you said, Michal, it's an inside job, one of their own, since over here, this city called Batsra is a city which really unifies Moav and Edom. Edom is our arch enemy, and Moav is the one that was a great benefit for us because it gave us Mashiach. So basically, it's an inside job. Edom, Hashem was buried the Refu Koyd in the Makkah. Inside of this city, Batsra, which is Koylil, everything, from within there will be an implosion. Mashiach will come and spare us from the Churban of Edom itself. Okay, there is obviously something very big taking place over here in this Rashi, telling us about the nature of Batsra. And it's also interesting is that it was the one of the first kings. The Amidla Melech B'mois Melech Rishon, it's the Malchus is there, but the Melech HaMashiach is also there because Moav is the Melech HaMashiach. So you have to say something along those lines to greater depth of what this Rashi means. Now listen to the Radak. There is no Radak. Malbum. There's a very short Malbum. Vishlacht Eish B'Seimon Shum Yigayim. Okay, so it seems that the Malbum maybe not, is coming to disagree with the Mitzudos, is that Taimon is the name of a place. It's not necessarily a reason. You want to say it's Yemen, right? You want to say it's Yemen? It's part. Is the, could that possibly be? I don't know. Today, not obviously, but maybe then it was. The Achla Armanois Batsra, who Metroi Poilin, the metropolitan, metropolis, the metropolis. Go back to my Batman days. Okay. Shall Edom shetachtov hu roimi hu ir shenibel lach Yeshaya mizeba. This is the passage I quoted before. Mizeba me Edom chamutz bi. Who is this creature that is coming from Edom that's stained? Chamutz bigodim means his clothing is soiled in blood. What?
Blood stained.
Mibatzra k'moshe perashti sham, that we already discussed pretty much what all those drushes. Okay, we're finished with this.
One second. Let's the statement that Batzra belonged to Moab is based on Yirmiyahu 48:24, where Batzra is listed among the cities of Moab.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Radak on Yishayahu 34:1 says that Batzra was a large city in Edom, which we just said. Ebenezer also believes it to be an Edomite city. Maybe there are two cities by the same name.
Aha, uh-huh. Interesting. But Rashi seems to be coming to address that issue by telling us it's really one city, which was very large, and it was on the border. It spanned these two nations. It brought them together. It obviously it was a city which unified to a degree the role of Moab and the role of Edom, and for us that has major significance because it represents the beginning and the end. Our Melech HaMashiach and Edom is the Golos of Edom, which is the end of the Golos. Okay, now we begin. I think we're up to now the fifth nation. We're up to the fifth nation of Musar, which Amos is going to give Musar, and that is Amon. Amon is Koyamar Hashem al Shloisha Pishrei Vinei Amon the Al Arbo Loya Ashiven. Okay, so what is this primary sin of Amon? Three Hashem is willing to overlook, but the fourth Hashem will not withhold His anger. Al Bikam Horois Gilad, they broke, they split the mountains of Gilad. Leman harchiv es kavulam, to widen their boundary. They stole land from Klal Yisrael. Okay, they conquered, they stole our land. And what is their punishment? Punishment, Yudal v'yitzati esh b'chemas Rabbah. Rabbah is a city. It was the capital of Amon. Rabbah, v'ochla armin o'secha, bisruah b'yom milchama. Here he writes, is that something unique, is that this will take place to a truah. Truah means the sound of a shofar. Or it can mean otherwise. It can mean of the blow, a cry, a horrible cry on a day of war. Bisahar, a storm, a tempest. Biyom sufa, on the day of a hurricane, a day of a major storm, a hurricane, whatever this is, the tornado. V'holach malkam ba'goyla, their king will go into exile. Hu v'sarav yachtov Omar Hashem. So we have to go through this slowly, see the different interpretations, just for a few minutes before we get started. Let's see first Mitzudos David to explain the Musar of Amon. Starting with Pasuk Yud Gimel, three Pesukim, Yud Gimel Al Bikam, Ala Shabaku Kirei Sehanash. I told you means they stole territory. Okay, that's another Mefarish. Mitzudos David over here is they did something we find that was done by in the time of the Chmelnitsky massacres. Mamish, exactly this. I don't remember this by the Holocaust, maybe Mengele, he did this experiments, but this with this it says here, they took Unashim and they cut open their wombs. Hohorois. Horois here means pregnant women, according to his interpretation. Shel Gilad, Lohoitzi Havladois. Now Gilad, is that over here name of a place, or is that over here, it seems the name of a place?
Yeah.
Eretz Yisrael. So they cut open pregnant women to take out their fetuses, to kill the babies. Leman, why? Leman yuchlu laharchiv es gvulam mima shegozlu mibnei Gilad al kilo yishoy yoyresh ma la'arer al hagvul. Because in addition to stealing property, they did not want anyone to make trouble for them later on. They did not want there should be the yorshim, the real inherit. What? No. Means the Klal Yisrael. They stole land, so they know that one day the world will say, you know, you're living on occupied land. Amon, they were on the boundary of Eretz Yisrael. They Gilad, Eivor HaYarden. Eivor HaYarden is Gilad. On the other side of the Yarden, there's a place called Gilad, and that was given to Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuben, Nechad, Shem, and Asher. And then there came a point in time when Amon, they went to war and they stole that land from us. They realized that the day will come, maybe in 100 years from now, the world will sit down and say, wait a minute, Amon, you're Ganovim. This is not your land. You stole this land from the Jews. You have to give it back. So they'll say, well, who's making a claim against us? Is anyone coming to make a claim against us? No, because all of the people that used to live here on this land, they're dead and they don't have any children. They died without children. Why did they die without children? Because Amon made sure they would not have children by killing off all of the offspring of the people who lived in Gilad. So this is a double act of cruelty. It was an act of cruelty to steal the territory of Eretz Yisrael, and it was a double act of cruelty is to kill all of the Yarshim of the people that from whom they stole the land from, so they should one day not come along and make a claim that you're living on stolen property. No one makes a claim. If no one comes to make a claim, there are no Yarshim, then by default you get to keep what you stole. That's how the Mitzvah Stavu learns shot in this pasuk. Next, what's going to be their punishment? There's going to be a war, and there's going to be a bitter war, it says here, and their capital city called Rabbah is going to be torched. And it's going to be torched through a teruah. A teruah on a day of war. What does that mean? The Ace Yoriah Ha'oyev Aleihem, when they would shout. When ancient times, when they went to war, there were sounds of war. They would blow a shofar, a trumpet, or they would scream. And this is done even today. That when soldiers go into war, they have to get them, build themselves up into a frenzy. And the way they do that, they have certain mantras. They have certain things that they say as they march in war in order to build themselves up into a psychological state, a frame of mind. In addition to trumpets, they would scream things. They would say, I think Hippie Puray was the call of the Crusaders. Right? When the Crusaders they killed the Jews, what were they saying? Hippipure. For a Jew to say Hippipure is
that word?
Yeah. Hippipure was the call was the shout of the Crusaders as they came into Yerushalayim, and it was used as Hippipure as a way to wake them up, to repeat a million times, get into a frenzy to incite violence. So for a Jew to say hip hip hooray as a cheer, it's not a nice thing to do because you don't realize it's like a Jew saying, I got my fingers crossed. You ever hear that before?
Yes.
You know what it means to have your fingers crossed? It means make a shesi, means a shesi the erev.
Sure.
So many Jews don't know that. They don't know that. So I remember my father many, many years ago, my father's Ron Levacha, it was during the Gulf War. The Persian Gulf War, and I think it was Ted Koppel. Was interviewing someone, Mamish, the beginning of the first Persian Gulf War. Remember that, those days? It was really the first Persian Gulf War, and no, that was the second one. I think this was the second. The first one, and it was scary. Okay, I remember Chaim Alin was saying Avinu Malkeinu. Well, Mamish, they were saying davening at Kach after Shmona Esrei, they opened up the Aron to say Avinu Malkeinu on the first day of the war, on the first day when the United States they invaded Iraq. It was a big pachat, and it was those days not like today. There was no internet those days. It was a little bit different. It wasn't so long ago. It wasn't all that long ago. So Ted Koppel was interviewing a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. I think that's when the Scud started flying. They started launching Scuds in Eretz Yisrael. So he was interviewing Jews, Yidden, Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And he was talking to them. We're now in a bomb shelter, and the children are sleeping, and this and that. We're very cautious, very nervous, and it's very quiet in Eretz Yisrael. And then the guy goes, and we're hoping for the best. We have our fingers crossed. So my father, he went, oh, from all the things to say, you have your fingers crossed means we're making a shesi v'erif. We're hoping for Yashka to come save us. Okay, obviously, he didn't realize there are millions of people listening, watching this. There wasn't in those days internet with a billion different channels to watch, yeah?
Also, people say, Good Samaritan.
Good Samaritan.
Good Samaritan.
What does that mean?
Someone who does a favor.
It's not good.
It's not a good
expression?
No.
Yeah, that one I didn't know. Good
Samaritan.
Okay, but the true meaning probably means something not too good. But when you say you have your fingers crossed, it means I'm making a shasi v'erev, and I'm hoping for Yoshka to come save me. So a Jew should never, ever, ever say, I got my fingers crossed. And a Jew should never say, hip hip hooray, because that was the call the Crusaders chanted as they attacked their enemy, specifically the Jews.
Also, they should say, knock on wood.
But not yesterday, it was 27 years ago.
What? First Persian Gulf War. Yeah.
Also, you shouldn't say, knock on wood. Wood signifies the wooden cross.
Knock on wood. Okay, these are all
the... Okay,
so you have to be careful. You have to be very careful the words that you use. Okay, so let's... So here we come. So here it says there's a terua. The terua either means the blowing of a trumpet, which was common in ancient times when there was a signal. It was a signal attack, or it means it was a chant, a shout that they would use when they marched into war to elevate their mental state, inspired to put themselves in a frame of mind to go forward in a state of frenzy and not be discouraged by any resistance. Okay, this is the Mitzudos David. So let's look first over here. B'shua be'isi yu'ireva aleim b'yam m'chom b'sar. What's a sar? The sar is b'sara so'iv asher yavai, the storm. So he's saying the storm of the enemy. B'suyam sufa hu yom ha'molcham. He's saying it's a metaphor. Sufa is a metaphor. It means really a tempest, hurricane, a tornado. He's saying here, it means in this context, it means it's a metaphor for the war. B'chofel hada b'milu ha'shoynais. So basically, here we're telling us over here in this pasuk is that they are going to be obliterated. They are going to be obliterated. Amon has done an act of cruelty by cutting open women. They stole our territory. They prevented us from having descendants to make a claim that it's ours in later generations. And therefore, they will suffer the consequences of their cattle being torched, their palaces being consumed, and they being eaten up. They being defeated by the enemy, who will shout on the day of war. And one more pasuk. Malcolm is Tezvav, Melech Bnei Amon, their king will go into exile, and their princes, together with them, will also go into exile. Okay, that is the parish of the Mitzudos. Let's see, we'll just do the Rashi, and we'll stop the Rashi. Let's see, Rashi, pasuk Gimel, says, Bikam Horois Hagilat, Hishchisu Oysam, they destroyed the people. The gam horos sehem biku. They killed the pregnant women. They cut open their wombs. Shelo yishaer yoreish sheyar al hanachla. There should be no descendant that should ever come along and issue a complaint that it's not their territory. It's very, it's interesting that ezel chacham haroya es hanoilat. It's very, very true. The world, you do commit a crime. We all know today, eventually, the people, it may take 100 years, but eventually someone's going to come knocking on your door and say, excuse me, sir, this is not your property. And they don't want that. And to do that, they acted another crime to kill all of the descendants of their victims to make sure they will never come make a claim. Madua Yarash Malkam. Are there no children to the Jewish people? Do they not have a Yoresh? Why did your king come and take over the territory of the Jewish people? So in other words, over there he said they were not successful entirely. You see there in Yirmiyah the same idea. The Yirmiyah is saying is, what do you think? You think you're going to get away with stealing the property of someone else forever? Eventually, the descendants of your victim will come forward and demand restitution, will demand justice. So Yirmiyah is saying, what do you think, Amon? That the Jews don't have children? The Jews don't have a Yarshim, people that will inherit their people that come in their place? And therefore you think you'll be able to get away, your king thinks he'll be able to conquer the territory of the Jewish people and get away with it. The day will come when he'll have to give it back. So why bother? Now, Yirmiyah is saying what normally makes sense to say. It could very well be that Ammon, they heard the words of Yirmiyah, and they said, that's right, we're going to make sure that no one comes to us and complains. How will we make sure no one comes to complain to us and makes an argument? We will kill, murder, and destroy the descendants of the Jewish people. Okay, tomorrow we'll continue with the Radak.